Hey everybody, it's your buddy Bob here with a special pre-show announcement that's actually extremely relevant to today's episode, so I'm asking you, please don't skip it. So, you know, that being said, I wanted to announce that I recently quit my day job to focus on being a full-time podcaster, and part of this involves launching a new project that's actually not all that new. So I'm sure a lot of you Retronauts listeners know all about Talking Simpsons, the other podcast I host. It's a Simpsons podcast that explores every episode in chronological order and in breathtaking detail. Well, my co-host Henry and I have decided to expand our operation, which means recording even more podcasts and, yes, a separate Patreon campaign to fund it all. So please, head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons to see what we have in store for you. We've put a month of work into this just to make absolutely sure we have enough extras up front to make funding us seem like a perfectly cromulent idea. We've got all the details over at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, but I'll give you the gist of it here. For just $5 a month, you'll get every episode of Talking Simpsons a week ahead of time and ad-free, as well as our new series, Talking Critic, if we hit that goal. And you'll also get whatever bonus episodes we happen to produce along the way. Right now, we've got 3 podcasts waiting for you as soon as you sign up, as well as the entire first season of Talking Simpsons if you've never heard it before. If you've never been part of the Laser Time Podcast Network's Patreon, you're looking at nearly 20 new podcasts just for signing up, and they're all Patreon exclusive. I'm sure a lot of you are wondering, you know, hey Bob, doesn't Retronauts support you in your insane podcasting lifestyle? Well, only a very tiny amount. It mostly supports Jeremy because he chose to make this his full-time thing when I left for my former day job, and I only take a little, and I only continue to take a little because I want Jeremy to be happy and to live the lush podcaster's lifestyle. But now I kind of want that too, so I'll be splitting my time between Retronauts and Talking Simpsons, so I won't be going anywhere on Retronauts. And I'll also be doing Talking Simpsons, hopefully more podcasts on top of that. And I'll also be available to do more podcasts. So if you like hearing my voice, you're going to be hearing it a lot more because this is all I'm doing now. So anyhow, thank you so much for letting me pollute your ears with this self-promotion. Remember, that's patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Now, on to the show. Ahoy hoy everybody, and welcome to another episode of Retronauts Micro. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is The Simpsons Arcade Game. And who else is here today with me?
Cool, man. It's Henry Gilbert.
Takes wind out of my sails. Let's fruit roll, man.
I'm going to say I'm Bob Embrace Nothingness Mackey, even though I already introduced myself. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we are the Talking Simpsons crew as well, as, yeah. And I'm on Retronauts. And this is another crossover episode. Mm-hmm. And so far, we've done Bart versus the Space Mutants. We've done Bart's Nightmare. We've referenced it so much, I feel like it's time to finally talk about the Simpsons arcade game, which would be the best Simpsons game until 13 years later. Nothing Hit else Run? Would ever be as good. Hit and Run is a good game.
It's up there. I have not played it. I've actually played it 5 years ago.
I'm sure it's aged badly, but it was a
it
very competent.
Great, but it's you're a Simpsons fan, it's still fun, and it's very the writing is great.
And it's a very competent GTA clone for as many as there were in that time period. I feel like it has the writing is great. You see all the great locations in Springfield, but we're not talking about that today. I do want to get around to that if there's a way to play it in an easy way.
I got to talk to you after the show.
Okay, please do. Mm-hmm. So yes, this is the Simpsons arcade game, and
I'm astonished we haven't done this, but then Henry peeped me to. We've done numerous playthroughs on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/lasertime, and an entire playthrough, if you're taking your time, is about 35 minutes.
Yeah.
So we've done that 3 times, so we know so much about it. I feel like I've done this before with Retronauts, but I guess I haven't.
Well, when the game had just come out, we did it at our old place at Games Radar. Mm-hmm. Then you played through it once in the early days of Laser Time, and then when it seemed that Harry Shearer had quit The Simpsons, we wanted to do a stream.
We did it again. I did it alone without any of you when I first was doing it on my own, and I love the game so much.
It's a great game. Let's get into some background info on it. I tried to find as much as I could about it. So this game was released in March of 1991 in the USA, and I think August of 91 in Japan. Again, this is an arcade game release date in 1991.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how accurate this is. Wikipedia has it at March 4th.
Is it February?
What's that?
Sorry.
Well, the game, the XBLA game said February.
Yeah, there's a timeline in the XBLA game, which I have to assume is the closest thing to accurate.
It might be, but again, these numbers could come from anywhere.
And arcade games never rolled out everywhere at once.
No, it's not like they all arrived all across the United States on March 4th. Mm-hmm. They could have showed up in New York first, or maybe California first, or New Jersey.
Chicago.
I didn't even look at it. I just thought it was February 91.
Okay. It could be. Mm-hmm. It could have arrived somewhere earlier than that. I don't know, but that's the date I could find. So mm-hmm. generally, spring of 91 is when it showed up.
Yeah.
And by the time this game released, the episode Bart's Dog Gets an F would have been the newest one. So this is the middle of season two.
And that's why it's so insane, because like the in terms of Konami, they were working on a Ninja Turtles game before the world knew what that would be.
I think so. I mean, the cartoon was what, 87?
But they were gearing up to make it before the cartoon. That's why the cover of the NES game
right.
is
the
comic
all
book
red
art.
Masks.
Because that's the only thing people could agree on yet.
Yeah, I think the NES game was made before the cartoon was a hit, but the arcade game was made after the
arcade,
cartoon was
whereas
a hit.
Whereas the Simpsons arcade game, like, the Simpsons is already a big instant phenomenon.
Oh, yeah. This was, like, at the height of Simpson Mania, like, in the middle of season two.
And that's what makes it great, because everything in the game had to be defined by the loose and regrettable details of season one.
Only season one.
We'll get into the references later, but man, I played through this again just yesterday, and they pull some deep cuts out of those
really
two seasons. So before this, Konami had a bit of a brief history with action/comedy games, so they're a good fit for the Simpsons arcade game. So things like Parodius, which is their parody of their other shooters. Parodius games are fantastic. Please play them. Kid Dracula, which is a parody of Castlevania.
Yeah.
And YY World, which is Konami's weird, like, let's cram all of our platform heroes into one game. So, like, Mikey from the Goonies, Simon Belmont's in it, that dumb baby's
Easter
in it,
Island
Oompa
Head.
Oompa.
King Kong.
King Kong?
King Kong is in it, too.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It was like Smash before Smash.
I
never really thought of Konami as a master of comedy in retro games, but they really were.
They were. Yeah. So we have these action comedy games by Konami, but they're also really good at making arcade brawlers, and obviously I have to name drop the Ninja Turtles arcade game from 1989.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best brawlers of that type. Of course, all of these games are extremely limited and made to steal your money, but the showmanship on display in both this and Ninja Turtles is superb.
On a composition level, it looks better than most episodes of the show.
And I would add X-Men to that.
Yeah, totally.
As well.
Oh yeah, X-Men would be the next year after this game.
Yes, yeah. It's one of my all-time favorites. It's so gorgeous. Like other people would try to make ones like this in licensed game. Like Sega's Spider-Man arcade brawler is really good, but it's not as good as the X-Men one. Like it's something about the scale of the characters, the amount of detail they get in there. And also, as we will see in the Simpsons game, like the care they got into replicating what was a drawn cell medium into digital effects.
They worked really hard. So I previously did a Simpsons games episode for Retronauts in 2012. That's in the 1UP years. And if you want to find those episodes, you have to go to archive.org and search for them. I'm revisiting these now because I'm doing a lot more work than I did before. And I want to find out who made this game, because there are credits in the arcade in the arcade game when you beat it, and they're actual names. So I went to Moby Games, I looked up some of these guys. Surprisingly, I did not find a single person who worked on this game who also worked on the Ninja Turtles arcade game.
Wow.
So it could be that game, no one knows who made it, and these guys could have also worked on it, but I was looking through the credits, and none of them were on Ninja Turtles.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it was just like concurrent development, or when the Ninja Turtles team was done, they then pushed them over to a new game in the
like Turtles in Time
division.
Or something,
yeah,
right?
They could have been just working on Turtles in Time.
Who is credited with the development of the game?
So I only have a few of the people written down here because the other ones, they didn't do anything that notable. So the few I wanted to mention... So the graphic design, these are the credits in the game, so they're kind of weird. So graphic design and supervisor I feel is like director. It would be called a planner in some other games. So that's Kengo Nakamura. All I have for him is he did character designs for Konami's Ajax and the Aliens arcade game, so he's more of an art guy. And in this period especially, people wear a lot of hats. Like, you can be doing the art and also writing the script, or you could be like doing the music and also, you know, doing gameplay elements too. Like, people did a lot of things
for
games.
Teams were much smaller then, and they didn't... And in the time investment was a little smaller than it is now, so you could wear different hats on a project that took 6 months to a year.
Yeah.
And I've loosely been trying to pay attention to every detail I can about how well The Simpsons are received in Japan. Because I'm fairly certain it airs over there.
It does. It does. But I actually watched an episode in Japan.
But it's not the phenomenon. Like, I go over there and like, man, you guys really love Snoopy and Adventure Time.
I couldn't find out when it started airing in Japan. I don't think it started airing this early in Japan.
But that's what is so funny to me, that like if this is a Japan production, it's sort of like if Activision contacted us to make a game out of Coupling, a UK show. Like, please try and recreate the comedy of this show that is not a phenomenon over here.
It's brawler.
It's a sitcom, essentially.
Well, the biggest thing that The Simpsons had over there wouldn't be until the late 90s when they became the official stars of CC Lemon, the drink CC Lemon over there.
And I think they were all dubbed in those commercials,
too,
in Japanese.
Yeah, they were dubbed over, and they had new people. But it was then season 9 caliber animation.
Yeah.
I go to Japan. I haven't been there that many times, but I go there, and my goal is to buy obscure merchandise that would never be produced here. Saw no Simpsons stuff.
No.
Wow.
So it's funny to me, the idea that the Simpsons, they had to have a giant meeting translated from someone in America to explain what this was. And they somehow did an astonishing job.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get into why it's so great after we get through a few more of these people that worked on the game. So a few of the other ones I pulled out of the credits were Yasushi Takano. He's credited with main character design, and I love how the graphics look in this game. And it's not surprising that he also created the character of Sparkster at Konami, and he would also direct the sequel titled Sparkster. Of course, it's a sequel to Rocket Knight Adventures. So he was one of the main engineers behind Sparkster, a very great-looking game of this era in Konami.
Yeah, no, you can see the care in all the sprites is amazing there, so I can see why he was the guy who would design Konami's Sonic. Like, character design in a mascot game, character design is one of the most important aspects you can have.
And he really nailed it. So the last person I have written down is Norio Hanzawa, who did the music. The music in this game is really good. It's not just a bunch of shitty remakes of the Simpsons theme. They do fun things with it. So this person did, he went on to go to Treasure to work there, which is a bunch of people left Konami to make Treasure, and did the OSTs for things like Gunstar Heroes, Dynamite Heady, Mischief Makers. So if you like Treasure music, this person did almost all of it. Like, they're credited with so many great soundtracks. I think the Gunstar Heroes soundtrack just came out on vinyl.
Yeah, I just think of how many times I replayed through, like, Mischief Maker, Gunstar Heroes, and heard those songs, and now realizing I'm hearing music over and over again from the people who made the Simpsons arcade game music too.
Yes.
And that's I forgot that Treasure was like the early platinum games. Like, you think of normally when I think of Japanese developers, I think, oh, you work in a place for 40 years, you don't ever leave. But Treasure did something nobody did in the early 90s of starting their own dev house.
Let's not talk about what happened to them in the about a decade ago.
In my mind, Treasure's last game was Astro Boy, and I don't need to think of any.
They all
others.
Went to video game heaven after that. So let's talk about the game itself. What I want to know from you guys is, when did this game enter your life, and when did you first stumble upon
it? That's what's so awesome to try and remember. Because I think I would go to my local arcade, spend my $5 allowance usually, and at one point I'm like, I can't keep pumping quarters into these games. I got to get the tickets so I can invest in something like a spider ring or a tic-tac. but I saw it debut there, and then I went on a family vacation. And it was kind of a race to see what hotel and what pizza place, what restaurant would have the Simpsons arcade game. And over a two-week trip across America, three of them did. And it was like every time I could like look at the machine, because like I couldn't afford to get very far in the game because it's cruel and unfair. And
it's 80 quarters. Yes. That's
the first level is nice. They let you beat it with one quarter. But then after that, it's a little punishing.
Yeah. And jumping ahead, my memory of beating it in the arcades was at the Tallahassee Mall Cyber Station. There's like seven people right now just perked up.
You were too young to be cybering, Chris.
A friend had a birthday, and a birthday at Cyber Station meant you could pick one game, and the attendant would come over, open up the machine, and flick on. You have not infinite play, but he'll just flick the quarter thing to where like you have as many credits as you can.
The dip switch.
I think it is.
I think it is. Yeah.
Is it?
I don't know. That could actually just be on the board itself. I don't know if that's what you do with the coin slot.
So that's what my friend Michael wanted for his birthday, to have infinite play of The Simpsons, because we could not afford to see the game through. And the guy put on, here's the maximum credits. Getting to the last stage, he had to come back and start flicking the quarters, because it was that ridiculously
difficult. Double boss fight,
it's so unfair.
I had a similar experience to you, Chris, where I'm sure I played this game like as soon as it hit my local arcade, which was called Fun N Pizza. Mm-hmm. I love that place. I had a birthday party there, and that's actually where I finished the game. So I was playing it before that party happened, and I can only get so far because I would have like $5. That will get you like halfway through the game if you're 9 years old in 1991. But I had my first and only formal birthday party at Fun Inn Pizza.
Wow.
And on that day, everyone who attended the party got double tokens. Ooh. You better believe my friends and I all beat that game together. It was a magical experience, which is why it's so special to me.
And the birthday, because it was four of us all playing, like, you get Marge, asshole, little brother.
Well, I think I got Bart because it was my birthday.
It was your birthday right to get Bart.
But when I saw this game, it was the same experience I had when I saw the Ninja Turtles game. Like, no one tells you these games are coming out. They don't preview arcade games in magazines.
And that's what I remember my parents being the cruel, cheap assholes they are. I'm like,
on the record,
Navajo country, and like, they have the Simpsons arcade game, and I have a quarter? No. Like, that's cool. I'll go look at this. Because the opening of the game...
The attract screen is magical enough. Like,
I can't compare it to anything, because like, that was the first big show of like pop culture woke Chris. And that it was recreated stunningly at the time in the game. They recreated the intro of the show with the right music and sound clips, and that hadn't really happened before.
They do a pretty good job, better than the Ninja Turtles arcade game, which was impressive. They had the light beaming out of the sewer, but they didn't do anything more than that with that intro. Henry, please, where did you find this game?
As soon as I saw it, in 91, I must have played it. As soon as I saw it, my regular arcade in Florida was Aladdin's Castle. I went there all the time, but we didn't move there till 92. So we would just go, though, to mini golf places every couple months. And so that was also, we'd play around in mini golf, but the real main event was getting $10 of tokens and then playing the games we wanted to play. And so that's where we played Ninja Turtles. And then boom, here is the Simpsons game. I was ecstatic. Me and my brother couldn't have been bigger Simpsons fans at that point, and my mom too. And so we were just super excited to play it. And though we never got it too far in it either, I think like that crusty balloon would take us out pretty much.
But what great effects.
Dive kick that baby.
But then it came to, I believe it was my brother's. Yeah, my brother's birthday is August. Mine is in September. So we didn't do birthday parties per se at arcades. But part of a birthday sleepover would be mom takes us to this mini golf course and she's like, $20 of tokens or however many amount of tokens it takes to beat this game, I'll keep feeding them to you. And we had that same thing too of like, we're in the nuclear power plant. Who knows how much longer this is going to go, but this looks like the end. Mom, I think we're out of tokens. Get more tokens, Mom, please.
It's a race against time.
We probably didn't say please. But
now!
So that was how much we were into it. We did beat it. Like it felt amazing to watch, like, after you've spent an hour feverishly playing this game that you never knew how far we get, you can never watch the ending.
There's and no knowing, YouTube video. I know there's only rumors and hearsay.
Knowing how much you spent had been spent to get there, it was amazing to see the ending.
Wow,
and
you paid to get there.
And so we would later the next year replicate that with, we didn't do it with TMNT, but we would replicate that with X-Men. But so That was how I first played it. And, of course, I was super into it. Every time, even in years to come, if I saw it at an arcade, I'd be like, I'm going to give this a little play. Because, again, I couldn't just pull it up on my computer and play it.
And that's the beauty of doing Talking Simpsons with you guys, is that we're revisiting those first seasons. Because if we didn't say that, it has no source material to draw from.
They
other than the first season.
They have 13 episodes of source material.
And so the ending is the ending of the, oh my God, the Marvin Monroe episode.
No Disgrace Like Home.
So the ending of the Simpsons game is directly pulled from that episode.
Yeah, and I want to get into it's not surprising this is a good game because it was made by Konami in this era where they were just making good game after good game. Mm-hmm. It is surprising that it is the most faithful Simpsons game that would ever exist until like they actually started getting writers involved in the process. Yeah. Like, and what's inexplicable to me is that this was made by a team who didn't speak English, presumably had never seen The Simpsons. And I have to feel like The Simpsons creators could not have known that Bart versus the Space Mutants was going to be bad. Mm-hmm. But it feels like they were more hands-on, maybe they were listened to more, because there's so many deep, deep cuts, including things like Binky from Life in Hell. He's an enemy in the game, and there's like little interstitial scenes with him between the levels where he's doing something.
It's just... exemplifies that Matt Groening was there giving them notes and reference material.
Yeah.
Because there's no fucking way they knew about Life in Hell.
They couldn't have.
Life in Hell, the comic that Matt Groening wrote that sort of got him the fame to meet James L. Brooks and make... who wanted them to make a Life in Hell show, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm. I think he wanted something with the same art style.
He wanted Life in Hell cartoons as the interstitials on Tracy
Ullman's show. At the last minute, he's like, I don't want to do that.
Like, Groening didn't want to sell it. Like, he would have had to sell it to 20th Century Fox, so he just made up something else.
And outside something obscure like the comic books, this is the only time Life in Hell crosses over with The Simpsons. I'm not sure it ever happened on the show.
I think there might have been a Life in Hell.
Will draw in toys. Yeah. There'll be toys drawn
and
in.
And that's the best factoid. Marge's shock sprite animation.
Yes.
Is, you might know more about it than me.
So I forget which episode it is, but they're on the Simpsons, when Burns lands in a helicopter, is it Rosebud?
Yeah, it's Springfield with an S. Sign.
Okay.
No, wait, I'm sorry. Last Exit to Springfield.
Last Exit to Springfield.
The top of the helicopter blades cut off her hair, and they said, like, oh, we were going to have a rabbit's ear come out there because she was going to be a Life in Hell rabbit. And then Matt Groening goes, like, did I tell you that? Like,
Groening's plan...
From the beginning
was that underneath Marge's hair was Binky Life in Hell rabbit ears.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so you see rabbit ears on Marge's skull when she gets electrocuted. You also see them, so if you hit the attack button too much, characters get like all tied up in themselves, like the jump rope wraps around Lisa. Mm-hmm. Marge's vacuum gets stuck in her hair and she's pulling on her hair. You can see the beginning of the ears. So
it's beautiful. It's like one of those things that clearly gets scrapped in the process of writing a show, but because of the nature of how little they had to pull from the games, it's in there to show you this was Matt Groening's intention before he was talked out of it.
As much as Matt Groening goofs on it now is something he doesn't care about, or he's embarrassed those were his plans. Mm-hmm. I've heard multiple interviews where they talk about how, like, in the first season, Matt Groening had all these big plans for crazy reveals that Krusty and Homer are the same person. Yeah. That was going to be his reveal too. And these were all these things he just let go because they realized they wouldn't really work on a show. But I could imagine in a meeting in 1990 with Konami that Matt Groening could say, have this. This is my plan. I'm doing this. And you know, her hair is going to be a rabbit. And all this stuff that they would then pick up on. They'd be like, oh, okay, well, we can put that in there. We can put that in there.
So in terms of references, like I said, this show was released around the time Bart's Dog Gets an F was, released into the wild. But because of the animation production schedule, I feel like these people had access to almost all of season 2's production elements.
I think maybe.
Because I see a lot of season 2 things in this game, one of which is the boss of Moe's Bar. He's just a random character model appears a few times in The Simpsons.
He's a semi-consistent background character in Moe's Bar.
But he looks like a Moe, but a skinhead almost.
It's so bizarre. They have voiceless patrons in Moe's Bar.
Yeah.
That are like set in stone now, but I guess they didn't back then.
But actually, if you look in the episode Homer versus the Eighth Commandment, is it?
Yes.
You look at the entire crowd of people watching the fight, he's in their house, like sitting in front of the TV.
Yes.
The boss of Moe's Bar, but like things like the first thing you see are references when you start the game. You see the Rusty Barnacle. You see the hamster from Bart the Genius. Skinner and Martin appear. Like, even in Moe's Bar, you see a poster for Carmen, which is the opera they see in Bart the Genius. Like, they are finding everything they can to shove into this game, which no other game at this point tried as hard as they did to be authentic.
Yeah. Well, in principle, Skinner is his more darker suit of the first season, not his redesign in season 2.
Barney's hair is correctly wrong.
Yes. It's part of his flesh.
When they walk by the arcade in the first level, that the boy who teaches Homer how to play the boxing game is right there.
Whatever his name is.
Sherman? Hermie? Like, I forget. It's listed in the credits, but he's elevated to one of the main players. He's in the credits of the Simpsons game. This is a character who matters.
And I could totally see that they just were, part of their thing was the animation studios sent them all their character packs and just shared with them, here's every character, here's the book, the Bible of every character. And that could get them season 2 elements as they're working on season 2 stuff, you
know? Yeah, and I have to wonder if it was Konami being like, no, we need all this stuff, or if it was Fox saying, here's all the stuff you need. Because maybe whoever made Bark vs. the Space Man's Imagineering, they were like, we don't need all that stuff, we know what the Simpsons look like.
Yeah. I would expect this being hardly their first license game that Konami would know from experience, we need every character design you have so we can make every enemy because you will run out.
Especially
it's weird. I did some work for the Disney Afternoon, And I got the reference material that Capcom got to make games like DuckTales and
Chippendale.
And Chippendale. And there was so little information when those games started out that like they're literally giving them unfinished storyboards. So I have this giant folder of like characters with the wrong names and unfinished storyboards.
I want that, by the way.
I don't know that I can give it away. Let's do this.
Let's
do this. But yeah, so I could even imagine they just had the storyboards for season two episodes that were midway through production. Though by like, if they were making this game in, say, like, you know, late summer, episodes, season two episodes are done at that point or close to broadcast.
And we've never got a, we've never gotten a great consensus on this, but it's something that exists and we know it because we're super fans. When Bart appears outside the show, his shirt is blue. In the show, his shirt is orange. On t-shirts, on merchandise, his shirt is blue, as in this,
this in this game. Game, his shirt is blue, but in Space Mutants, his shirt is, regular.
Is
that red
orange.
Or orange? I don't know what it is.
I read it as orange.
I always thought it was orange, but like it, this is blue shirt merchandise, Bart. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, it's strange.
Please
clarify. I don't know why that's like,
you know,
it is.
That can be something I can dig into in future.
It's
stuff.
Like in Butterfinger commercials, his shirt is blue.
I have to. There's people we got to interview about this.
We need a the truth is out there poster with Bart in a blue shirt.
Secret of the blue shirt.
Yeah, I meant to, when we were watching, I had a note like, pay attention and just find fucking Marge's vacuum, because I think that is an original Konami creation.
Yeah, it's like, well, she's the mom. What does she do?
And she's so ill-defined. She has. That's all she's got.
I mean, in her. Okay, so we talked about the attract mode, the attract screen, which is an approximation of the Simpsons opening, but they cut to profiles as they would in many Konami brawlers. Like, here's this character. Here's how old they are. Here's a quote from them. They're not great. I mean, like, Marge's characterization is from Notice Crazy Like Home, where she talks about making gelatin desserts, or that's what it says. That's one of her hobbies.
Marge and gelatin desserts was an early character trait for her.
Yeah, and she would like even be on trading cards with like a big gelatin dessert made with her hair.
I mean, in the 70s, I always took that as like dudes who grew up in the 70s, that's what they think of their moms doing, is making a complicated gelatin dish with fruit inside or marshmallows or something. Which,
or meat. Disgusting.
Oof, yeah, I don't want to meet one, but you know what? It'd be nice to try a gelatin casserole sometime.
I eat one spoonful of gelatin, that's enough. And on this attract...
with real hooves, you know.
On this attract mode, shockingly, Homer's catchphrase isn't dough, it's yellow.
Yellow.
So I guess dough had not been hammered out in stone as Homer's ultimate catchphrase.
We just happen to have this on the board when we did Talking Simpsons Season 1. This is Homer Simpson's first dough. In, like, what episode?
Notice Grace Like Home?
The previous... Whoa, look at this place. What a dump.
It's worse than you think. I just trampled this poor sap's flower bed.
Homer, this is our house.
Stop!
They're more fond of using the
I
think we heard that six times in the Talking Simpsons
so far. He definitely did it a couple times in the first season, but it wasn't solidified until the merchandise following the first season.
I can forgive them for that.
Homer wasn't in 1990 in production of this game. Homer was not the character you merchandise. You merchandise the shit out of Bart.
Yeah.
And Bart is the most well-treated of the characters.
Why weren't there four playable Barts?
And I always say this, but and this is to let you know, I've been saying it so long because we've been doing Talking Simpsons for 2 years. When The Simpsons started, I was exactly Bart's age. And the only frame of reference I have for Homer's age is the arcade stats screen, because his age changes all the time.
Is it 36 on the attract screen?
It's 36. Okay. So when we started doing the Talking Simpsons, I was Bart's age when the show started. 2 years ago, I was exactly Homer's age. Now I'm older than Homer.
Actually, Oakley and Weinstein aged him up to 39.
They did.
So you're safe, Chris.
It fluctuates. Oh, thank God.
You'll never be 39.
You'll die before that.
No, that's not
right.
Another jerink.
So the plot of this game is...
Well, Bart is Bartman in it, too.
He is, like, yeah, briefly. Yeah.
Very briefly.
So the plot of this game is a bit silly. I mean, The Simpsons don't really belong in a brawler at all, which is why this game is so fun, but... The Simpsons are in downtown Springfield, as they're wont to do, and Smithers is robbing a bank, as he's wont to do, and he collides with the Simpsons, a giant diamond flies out of his hand, lands in Maggie's mouth. Instead of removing the diamond from her mouth, he just takes Maggie and runs away, and your goal is to find Maggie, catch up with Smithers and find Maggie.
You don't want a lawsuit on your hands? Like, what?
Call the police, you know who stole your baby. But instead, apparently Smithers is part of a vast underground crime syndicate with many faceless goons that can come after the family.
It's how Little was defined in the show that Burns is the closest thing to the ultimate villain.
Yeah.
And he is, but not to the extent that he's stealing jewels.
No, not yet.
And some of the greatest designs in this game, I want to give them a billion points of credit for, is all the other characters that are unique to the game.
Yeah.
They look like real Simpsons characters, but this pink-shirted, gray-haired guy doesn't exist. The green-suited executive guy doesn't exist.
Yeah, the really cute mobsters, one is in an oversized suit.
Look awesome! Yeah. And
I
like,
love how they look.
Mobster and son.
I have to believe they're in some note somewhere, because that's before they came up with the Fat Tony crew.
Yeah,
these would
is.
Have been good Simpsons mobsters.
Yeah, well, and that they get... The one that they did get was the pro wrestler.
Yes.
They were able to get him, but... Otherwise, Smithers employs about 200.
The pro
goons.
Wrestler's on screen for like 4 seconds.
I mean, he's a boss fight. Yeah.
No. On the show.
Oh, on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very briefly.
It's when Homer and Barney are fighting. Fighting in real life as they're fighting on the TV.
And the bear. The bear. From the camping episode.
Yeah,
they
call the Simpsons. The problem with this game is it's not their fault, but at this point, the Simpsons did not have enough villains.
No.
So I feel like a lot of these were like, let's look through character model sheets and find out who looks like a villain. So we get the wrestler, we get the wino in Mo's bar, who's somehow like a giant. Like, we get a kabuki man who looks like Burns, which I'm sure they just created out of whole cloth.
In hindsight, you could have done something really cool with, like, a Flanders boss fight. Where, like, you don't attack him, you just, like, break his shit. So your stuff seems good by comparison.
House. Yeah. So, one of the most amazing things about this game, I mean, it's a brawler, it's pretty repetitive and pretty cheap in terms of how much it kills you, but the greatest appeal of this game, to me at least, is the artwork.
Yep.
The Simpsons have never looked like this before or since, but it's this great mix of, like, great Japanese sprite work sensibility and Matt Groening's iconic designs, and together, they're beautiful. And if you look at sprite sheets of these characters on websites, there has not been before or since more artwork per character in a brawler. There are so many unique animations for different weapons, for different attacks, for just everything possible to do with these characters. They put so much time into making these characters convincingly cartoony and just fun to watch.
And the characters have like a dual team-up ability.
Yeah, yeah.
Uniquely with each one.
If you leave
all four of them.
Yeah, if you leave one character standing by another for long enough without moving, they will team up briefly for an attack that, like Bart and Lisa hold hands and kind of clothesline enemies. Marge and Homer get into this weird like giant circle and like roll over enemies. And I think Homer just puts Bart and like Lisa on his back. Like,
And Marge's super attack is the weirdest looking animation.
Which one is that?
Just when she swings the vacuum, just she's making this derpy look on her face.
Well, because it follows the Konami template as well. Like, there's a better attack. It'll cost you some health. Yeah, it's going to cost you some health. But that was also gave them the excuse to draw them in their super character costumes, which I'll give Konami big thumbs up there, too, that Bartman already existed as just a cheap licensing ploy.
But only in merchandise at this point.
Yeah, yeah. But I loved Bartman. Bartman was my favorite as a kid. But then meanwhile, for Homer, Marge, and Lisa, they just had to draw them in superhero costumes.
And they didn't need to do this. You see those superheroes for a second when you die and you come back to life. Yep. They fly into the screen of superheroes and they turn back into regular people. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to do that. It's such an amazingly like just creative touch. Just someone had to draw sprites for that and create new characters for that.
And all those sound clips too, like they got voice work in it.
That is true. Everyone but Harry Shearer. And they did not get whoever did Burns is some Konami like a secretary or something, because it's not even trying to be like Burns.
It was the one white guy in the
company. It was like, welcome to your grave, suckers. That's what Burns sounds like in this game.
The thing I've always wondered for years, I always thought he was saying nice fruit roll man, because he would smack smack trees and like health power-ups would fall down.
And Binky would pop out, Bongo.
Yeah, it would tell you, like, it's all gone, get out of here. But, like, it was an apple, so I thought Bart was saying, let's fruit roll, man.
Saying, let's go for it, man.
I think he's saying, let's go for
it. Yeah, and you might even get like, a word bubble, because
nice
when the characters
roll,
talk, you get a word bubble because you're in a noisy arcade, presumably. And all you can hear is, like, Marge murmuring.
Well, I love all the sound effects in it, too, of, like, bloink, bloink. Like, it's very Simpsony, but also cartoony.
The wet thwack you get when you hit enemies is really great, too. I can just hear it in my head.
Well, and the idea of, like, Bart, when you deconstruct it as Bart beat into unconsciousness hundreds of guys with his skateboard, it's kind of dark, but it's funny in practice. Homer's the only one who's like, Homer would beat up 30 guys in a day.
He uses his fists.
Yes.
I love that.
He does kick,
him.
Too, like
he
a Ninja
kicks.
Turtle, yeah.
But he fights like how Homer would fight. This is more painful than it looks.
You can't make him scream, I'm a hemophiliac in this game.
Oh, and one of the great things we did going through the first season of Talking Simpsons was a failed inside joke that they kept going that no one really noticed. you eventually get to like Channel 6 as one of the levels.
Yeah, one of the levels is Channel 6. Ken Brockman, though.
And Ken Brockman's not there because a running joke in the first season was like, hi, I'm this guy, Scott something.
Scott Christian.
Well, let's say the Channel 6 News with Kent Brockman. Hi, I'm Scott Christian. Kent Brockman's not here tonight.
But and that was supposed to be a running joke, but it's like, that's not that funny.
No.
Eventually, let's see Kent Brockman. So Kent Brockman did not exist at the time of this game.
No, I don't think he did. Maybe he was working his way to the show.
No, Kent Brockman was on Krusty Gets Busted. So he had appeared, but he wasn't the news guy.
He wasn't the news guy yet.
Yeah. So how this game plays, it feels like an evolution of the Ninja Turtles Konami game 2 years prior, only it's a lot more advanced than that. You have your standard array of attacks that are identical to the attacks in Ninja Turtles, but the Simpsons can pick up and interact with background objects, they can grab some limited use items, and weapons from time to time. So you can literally pick up and throw Santa's little helper at an enemy if you want to.
Yes, yeah.
Which is great.
You gotta throw a snowball at the Krusty balloon. Yeah. Like, that's a free gimme.
There's so many cool things like that in there, and also, I just remembered another reference in there, is like, I believe the I Am a Wiener spray paint
first level.
Yeah, which that was a recurring gag in seasons 1 and 2, and then Simpsons stopped caring.
But I don't remember if there are any El Barto graffito tags.
Graffito tag.
Damn you, graffito.
Hey everybody, Bob here, and you might be wondering why a guy who gave up driving 5 years ago has any business at all reading an ad for something like TrueCar. Well, I know firsthand all the baggage that comes from owning a car, the insurance, the maintenance, gas money, and choosing the perfect bumper sticker to sum up your complex belief systems. And before all that, there's figuring out which car to buy in the first place. So if you're in the market for a new ride, consider turning to TrueCar. With TrueCar, you can see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want. Information that empowers you to feel confident. Once you register with TrueCar, you can connect with a certified local dealer and see real pricing on actual inventory. And with over 13,000 certified TrueCar dealers nationwide and over 3 million cars sold by TrueCar dealers, you can rest assured that TrueCar has a history of happy customers. Customers who, on average, save $3,000 off the MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
The best in paranormal talk radio is here on Podcast One as part of the Jericho Network. Beyond the Darkness examines all aspects of the supernatural every day, Monday through Friday. And now, the same team behind Beyond the Darkness bring you the most frighteningly real-life dramas on True Crime Tuesday. Subscribe now by visiting darknessradio.com. Then, click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Again, that's True Crime Tuesday. Visit darknessradio.com and click the True Crime Tuesday banner. Subscribe now.
So, and I do a special shout out to the Dreamland stage.
Very good.
At the time, I wasn't that versed in the show, but it's one of my favorite stages because it's so weird.
I mean, it shows you what they thought. Well, they'd had so many dream sequences in The Simpsons, and I think that in the first season even, I think that's where they took the coloring cues from because the colors were washed out in Bart's dream.
Yeah, season one first episode, air quotes, is Bart his math dream is all black and white.
That's right. And it's pretty intense. So the levels, we went over a few of them. So the first one is Downtown Springfield, just a regular Great Tour of Springfield. Then we have Krusty Land, invented for this game, which is basically you fighting a bunch of binkies, I think, fat men in teacups and things like
and guys in crusty outfits bouncing up and down on balls.
Yeah.
Well, then once you knock them out, that's another extra thing they added, which I wonder if that was a Matt Groening thing to be like, you have to make it clear these weren't crusty attacking them. Their mask has to fall off to show that they're not crusty.
And actually, when you kill the bear, the boss bear, he transforms into one of those pink guys, and the pink guy runs away inexplicably. I think they're like, we don't want to kill a bear in this game.
I would expect Matt Groening, knowing how hands-on he was with changes to the show, that he could have been the force saying, the Simpsons don't kill an animal.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that.
Even if it attacks them first. So Up next, we have Springfield Discount Cemetery, in which you fight zombies. Very thriller-esque zombies, where they dance and everything. It's great.
It breaks the magic of the show. It's like, oh, I guess magic exists. And then they have to put in a thing at the end that, oh, they were just guys in suits, too.
Except ghosts chase everyone away at the end. The guys that are, so you go into a grave to go to Moe's Bar, which is underground.
Well, because they...
during Prohibition. It was a long time ago.
Well, it is a 90s beat-em-up, so there has to be an elevator station.
Yeah, so you take that elevator down into Moe's Tavern at level 4, which is just gigantic. It's like the size of a stadium, and Moe is in the game. You don't fight him or anything, just kind of in the background, but Princess Cashmere is there.
Multiple
Simpsons
ones.
The Simpsons arcade game is in there.
Along with Aliens, which one of the guys worked on, which we talked about
before.
One
of you guys said that you know it's a season 1 or 2 product if it really plays up the Space Mutants.
Yes.
Because that's such a fucking tertiary
it's
thing in the
really
show.
Season 1.
By season 3, they're like, we've made our last Space Mutants joke. Yeah. This isn't funny.
They're
going away with the happy little elves.
So yeah, at the end of that level, you fight a giant wino who just breathes fire on you because he's so drunk. It's a really grotesque caricature. I love how he looks, though. It's just a weird, strange character.
If you ever rewatch season 1, it'll be bizarre to see him again. Like, really? That guy was like one of the most pain in the ass bosses?
Shouldn't they be fighting him?
The guy never says anything?
Level 5 is the Springfield Butte, and it's basically just the Call of the Simpsons version of video game in video game form. Call of the Simpsons episode in video game form, rather.
Lots of caves with bears in it.
Yes, and
I like that one because it's, I think, one of the first times they introduced multi-level design, because there was only one plane you were fighting on the whole time. But this time you could be up, you could be on the top level or the bottom level.
That's true. And Dreamland is the next one.
Because they all die.
Yes. So we didn't mention this before, but some of these levels have mini games between them that explain.
Yeah.
I mean, every level ends with an explanation of how they end up in the next level.
And that's, to me, that's one of the amazing things, like, made watching it so much fun, because Bart and Lisa would fall.
Right.
Whoever you were was playing.
The thing would happen to them.
Yeah, I mean, it's
not
dissimilar from the Ninja Turtles arcade game, but like it was something that wasn't very common.
Yeah, so they fall off a waterfall in Springfield Butte, and the mini game you play is tapping the button to have them slap themselves in the face to wake up, which is really funny. Or have someone slap them in the face, presumably you. So you're slapping Simpsons characters in the face to wake them up.
But that's
to go to
after
Dreamland.
They fall over a waterfall and are at least concussed. They're like, the whole family's dead. Thanks to Smithers. Like, Smithers did that. He put them in that calamity by grabbing Maggie.
And sinking countless numbers of Burns' henchmen.
I mean, many men are dead now. We can't forget that. So so we have Dreamland, which is a very inventive stage. You fight giant bowling balls and flying saxophones. One thing I was thinking of in this game, it's like, Lisa's weapon is a jump rope. Why wasn't it a saxophone? That would have made much more sense. Maybe it was too bulky or something.
That's where I don't know exactly where the continuity is, because Krusty gets busted. It was one of the first things to define continuity on the show as little as exists. Mm-hmm. But Sideshow Bob appears in the game to give you a power-up as a good guy.
I don't think they understood. I think it was just a misunderstanding of what
that
Sideshow Bob's job is.
Yeah, and in Space Mutants, he was a boss. Here, he is there to give you, like, a hamburger or something.
That's right.
Yeah. So, up next, we have Channel 6, which is just... Konami's like, okay, we've had enough fun with Simpsons. Now we're Japanese. We have to let you know we're in Japan making this game. So here's our samurai stage.
It's the equivalent of a factory stage. It's sort of just because it allows for like endless sprites. It doesn't look anything like any other level, and is kind of has the stupidest look.
You're going through a few different sets, like a space set,
like the end of Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You go to every movie possible is being shot in Springfield,
and it was kind of like how we saw Channel 6 in Bark It's Famous, where they're doing a lot of things in one studio.
Playing it now, it reminded me of the first Ace Attorney mission.
yeah,
that's right.
We're shooting a local samurai show.
That is more of a thing I think in Japan. Of like, no, this is a TV drama. We're filming it.
What was your town's local samurai show?
We didn't get that one.
And that they got to have you fight a giant kabuki guy.
That's so great. They were just allowed to make that guy up. He looks like Burns, actually. His face looks a lot like Burns, like the kabuki mask guy. But yeah, you fight a kabuki dancer. Very cool. And I think, actually, in Ninja Turtles, the arcade game for the NES, they added a very Japanese stage to that as a bonus level. And I think you fight a kabuki guy at the end of that
one,
too.
It at least fits more with Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, I don't know why you're suddenly fighting ninjas, why Channel 6 is fighting you two. It's like, get out of our studio. We're trying to record here. Maybe they're just all Smithers agents in disguise. And the last level is, okay, it's basically just give me your money, because it's a dual boss fight. And I want to say, I wish I had played this or watched the video. I want to say Ninja Turtles Arcade ends like this, where you fight Shredder and then Krang.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, you fight Smithers and then Burns.
And then Burns in a giant mech suit.
And they're both dicks. They're both huge dicks. But you also... You don't really have a Springfield Nuclear Power Plant stage. You just run into the room almost immediately, and which I feel like they could have got a lot out of a nuclear power plant stage.
They really could, but this is a long game as it is with eight stages for an arcade game. But I mean,
it is a lot of but coin munching. But so then you play Smithers basically wearing a Dracula cape full of bombs that he is trying to kill you with.
And he has a mad cackle, which you hear a lot in the game.
I am shocked. I wonder if at any point he was Black Smithers in the development.
I wonder.
Or if they immediately were like, no, he's always the White Smithers. I'm wearing my Smithers shirt right now.
Oh, it's from the arcade game. Yeah. He has a bunch of bombs in his coat. I love that
shirt. It's a great
shirt.
Yeah. I love how evil he is. Mm-hmm. Then you get to... When I was playing it the first time as a kid and got to that point, I was like... Oh, I guess it ends with Smithers, but it'd be really weird if it wasn't Mr. Burns. And like, there he is.
What a fake out. And you fight him in a giant mecha, which goes through many forms as you destroy parts of it. And the one cheap thing about this game, I mean, it's very cheap. It's an arcade game. But as with all arcade games of this type, when you fight a boss, when it's about to die, it'll start flashing.
Yep.
I swear to God, Mr. Burns starts flashing when his health bar is like halfway done. The health bar you don't see. So it's like, man, he's almost dead. 5 minutes later, oh my God, I'm still fighting Mr. Burns.
Just all about the cowardly dive kick. Get in, get out.
Yeah.
And then he dies.
He dies. He has X's over his eyes, and Maggie puts her pacifier in his mouth, and they walk away. Presumably having killed scores of men, Smithers, Mr. Burns, they're just walking home peacefully
to
watch TV.
Too.
With the diamond, yes. And they're now millionaires. Mm-hmm. They can pursue their dream of having dream and friends.
And they also spent the money on the Danny Elfman song.
Like,
they did.
You know, we talked about that on Bart's Nightmare and on... Bart versus Space Mutants, that only in the NES Space Mutants did they pay for the Danny Elfman song. Everybody else is like, no, like that's a lot of money.
And the EA one, and I don't know, I put it on our YouTube channel in the highest quality I could get it in. But it's really fun. It's the best 1991 technology could do to recreate an opening sequence.
Oh, I mean, they did cut corners, obviously, but they did the best they could with that memory and technology.
I don't know. It all fills me with such warm memories. The exact kind of game I wanted over this thing I was becoming obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Like, I was already obsessed with.
Well, it should be said that we never got this game in home versions if you were on a console, because obviously Acclaim were like, no, we want to make a bunch of bad games. Keep that good game in the arcade.
It's really weird that they made a bunch of terrible ports.
I could also see why this didn't get a port, at least in America, because when Konami made the ports to Ninja Turtles, they didn't share a port with another publisher. So if Acclaim was going to publish it, they'd have to make a deal with Konami, and they weren't talking to each other. Like, they weren't going to make a deal. Man.
There were some home ports of this. The Commodore 64 version, I would call it a noble attempt.
Sure.
They did what they could, but...
Does the color black not exist in the Konami and the Commodore?
I couldn't tell you, but they did the best they could, but this was not capable of delivering arcade quality graphics, this old system from like 1984 or whatever.
I think somebody said it was one of the last Commodore games.
It probably was, yeah. So there's also a DOS version that looks pretty close, I'll say, but it does cut a lot of animation, and that's what really makes this game special. So that was probably the most authentic version, but now, of course, you can emulate it through MAME, and it's really easy to get.
You don't even need to use MAME if you were...
it's true.
Yes, you do. you don't have the game now, you got to use MAME.
I mean, I could plug in my 360 and play it.
I ain't doing that. So
mine's hooked up to... That and the Ninja Turtle game is why I'll never, ever get rid of my 360.
I mean, I probably won't get rid of it, but I won't hook it up for a while. But I mean, okay, so what we're talking about is very, very, very briefly... On Xbox Live and PSN, the dates I have are February of 2012 to December of 2013. This game was available in a great port with the American and the Japanese version of it, and now it's unavailable because shit sucks.
Well, it's a very weird agreement that I learned about briefly in my little battle with publishing and whatnot, that these games and Ninja Turtles were financed by companies who currently had the license to then port those arcade games to promote bigger games. The only reason we got the Simpsons arcade game is so EA could promote the Simpsons game.
I see. I was wondering, because I know when Ninja Turtles Arcade came out for
Ubisoft's
Xbox Live,
logos all over it.
And also, it was promoting the new animated CGI movie, which was coming out around that time.
Yep.
So.
And it's the same way, like, when the Star Wars movie came out, Super Star Wars miraculously appeared, and it was just me having worked in there briefly. I'm like, that was part of the marketing budget.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That is a marketing budget thing, because there's no way Konami would have done that.
Konami
on
would
own.
Never do it. And
well, they wouldn't pursue the license again, and they yeah. wouldn't put the money into it, because there's not that much money to begin with.
Yeah, and but it was. I mean, thanks to I'm infinitely mm-hmm. grateful to Ubisoft and Konami mm-hmm. coming together to make that Turtles arcade mm-hmm. thing happen, because that was an early proof of you can make people will buy this if you re-release yeah. these
and
things.
It's online.
Do it. Yeah,
it might still work. I don't know.
Is it also unavailable in stores?
Well,
digitally?
When they delist any, yes, it
yeah.
is unavailable. Yeah,
because it was a light marketing deal. I think it was like 2 years.
Well,
it was on
Nickelodeon
there.
Nickelodeon has TMNT now, so it's not even Ubisoft.
But Simpsons, that was like yes. it wasn't there that long, and it was also one of those eye-opening things, as like a game rar. Getting older, because people slightly younger than me reviewed it and like, six. And I remember yelling at, I think, to Henry, and like, what the fuck? How do you get the Simpsons arcade game of six? He's like, have you played it lately? Like, part of it, loving this game, is being there when it happens.
You need the arcade context, too. Yeah. Like, the splendor of the arcade in 1991 and how this game was meant to be played.
But on Unlimited Continues, you're done in 35 minutes for a game that you did pay $10 for.
I think it was 20.
No, it was 10.
Okay. It was 10 bucks. Yeah, I bought it.
Well, because TMNT was 5, mm-hmm. but after that, people realized, like, we could charge 10 for this. But also, I thought, if 10 is what covers it to be licensed from Fox Interactive yeah. Entertainment, then fine. I will pay this because I love The Simpsons and I
want
to see
this.
And as much work as they could put into it of just, it had every arcade flyer, mm-hmm. it had the Japanese version, it had all these extras in it to mm-hmm. make it more worthwhile, but
and
it was
Japanese
just for the nostalgia.
Version had a nuke power up.
Which seems odd because they removed...
Should be the reverse.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. they removed the stuff in Fallout 3, obviously, because mm-hmm. they're a little sensitive about nukes. But now there's mm-hmm. like a nuke weapon you can throw in this game.
Well, yeah, the when you're fighting Burns, he throws nukes at you.
Yeah.
But in the game up to then, along with the bowling ball and other and the slingshot, you could find a nuke, which was a screen clearing attack.
Interesting. I didn't know it actually did that. I didn't actually play the Japanese version.
It's a little harder, huh. but it was awesome that it was there. Like, it was that one moment in time, like, we're going to get every arcade game ever.
So one last thing, which is deceptive on Konami's part, not Konami's part, but whoever made this, EA, there is a mobile game called The Simpsons Arcade. Go to hell. You are not The Simpsons Arcade
Boo,
game.
Boo, it sucks.
It's a lousy interpretation of it in some ways, but what astounds me is like, okay, 25 years later, mm-hmm. with all this advanced technology, and this game looks immensely worse.
Yeah.
It is ugly, it is cheap, it is awful. I Ooh. Don't even... Like, they made this to trick people, I think. I like that game. Oh, what the hell is this?
It nails only the balloon-blowing-up minigame.
Yeah.
But it is everything else is wrong.
It is Homer fighting, and it's like, do you like 2 frames of animation instead of 8 for a punch?
Yeah,
that's what, like
this
God.
Was. This was to promote the big EA game.
I forgot all about that. It made me so mad when it came out. Like, I'll play Simpsons Tapped Out all day before I touch Simpsons
but
Arcade.
This is that Simpsons Arcade was or Touch or what is it Tapped Out? That's a game they made to keep going. This game was to promote the EA game, because if you remember, and I was not this big a Simpsons fan with contacts at EA, there's one on every platform and every cover is different.
Yeah.
They wanted to sell you every single version of
they
the game.
They spent a lot of money. An ungodly amount of money on the Simpsons game.
And it sucks.
And from what I hear...
the production values are visible in them.
Yeah, Tapped Out is just makes EA like an insane amount of money every month. And I will argue it's not a game. It's an ant farm with timers. Like, it's one of those things. It's like, you can build stuff. We'll build it faster if you give us money. But, you know, you don't have to.
I have Disney Magic Kingdoms, and I'll never play another game like that.
I mean,
again.
It's like, it doesn't matter where you put anything. Mm-hmm. You touch things, and donuts pop out, and you have to wait for
cool
things.
Cool down times, managing 6 different currencies.
I hate, I think there's a great, like, South Park clip about how these games are made. Like,
about the whales. It's all real.
Maybe I'll put it in here. But, yeah, that's been our Simpsons Arcade discussion. We've been at this for an hour, but, I mean... This is one of my favorite arcade games, not just because of The Simpsons. It's just a very well-crafted game. It's so artfully made.
Yeah.
The graphics are great. The sound is great. It's very authentic to the show itself. I mean, we shit on Konami a lot, deservedly, but we have to remember they were one of the best developers of all time. It's sad that they come to what they become, but man, The Simpsons arcade game is so good. I love it so much. Still to this day, go back and play it. Steal it! Steal it from the internet! You can do it. It's fine.
Very good, and just the idea that, like, playing arcade games at this point, you didn't know any of the characters. And I wasn't aware of... I was aware of Ninja Turtles around the time the arcade game came out. Mm. I was aware of X-Men when the X-Men came out. But, like, I didn't grow up with them. I was on board with The Simpsons day one. I wasn't just like part of the fandom. I was the reason for the fandom. And seeing a great game immediately for something I was on board from day one of was just astonishing. Yeah. I'll never be able to recreate that. And I'm just so glad I was there.
Such a beautiful game. One of my favorite memories. And just, yeah, the sprites, everything is beautiful. And it is such a great distillation of what was magical about The Simpsons and that Simpsons Mania first year. And also, it ruined you for all future Simpsons games you would play.
It did.
On NES and Super NES.
And I think
and
Space Mutants would release around this time, too.
Pretty close.
In spring of 91. Yeah. So, yeah. But
woof.
Yeah, disgusting. Well, we talked about that before. Pick up that episode if you want to hear it. So this has been Bob Mackey. I've been your host for this episode of Retronauts Micro. Thank you so much for listening to it. I'm so happy that you listened to it. And if you want us to do more Simpsons stuff, please let us know. I've been kind of wanting to explore the more notable and actually the few good Simpsons games with these mini podcasts. And by mini, I mean an hour instead of 90 minutes. So thank you so much for joining us on this wild ride. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. And I'll let Henry tell you about our other podcast.
Bob, me, and Chris host Talking Simpsons every week, where we chronologically go through every episode of The Simpsons. We are deep into season 5 right now. We have done over 100 episodes. We have a great time talking through it, and we are the greatest Simpsons historians in the world. I'm going to say it right here.
You can tell how nerdy we are. Look at these. We're talking about Marge's rabbit ears. We're talking about so many deep references.
We have to dump all this information out of our brains or else we'll go mad. So that's every week on, you can find Talking Simpsons on iTunes. TalkingSimpsons.com is where you find a repository of all the episodes. And we may have more cool things, so you should definitely follow me on Twitter to hear about that as well. HENEREYG. Follow it, baby.
And I also want to talk to you about our Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/retronauts, we have a lot of great incentives if you want to support our show. Of course, our show is funded by great listeners like you. If you want to donate, just go to patreon.com/retronauts. A very popular tier is the $3 a month tier. And with that, you get episodes a week ahead of time at a higher bit rate. And with no ads, which a lot of people have been saying, I don't like the ads, and this is a way for you to get our podcast without the ads. And Patreon is very nice in that they give you an RSS code or address that you plug into your player, and you download podcasts as you would normally. So it's very convenient, and it's a way for you to give to us directly without hearing ads. So go to patreon.com/retronauts. Chris?
Laser Time. That's about it. Hey, wait. You guys
go there.
You guys are on a show. Laser Time is a big, dumb podcast network with a bunch of fun shows, including a video game show about current games, Video Game Apocalypse, really fun, Michael Parage, you've heard him on here before, he owes that. 302010, awesome look, 30 years ago and 20 years ago and 10 years ago into the past. It's really fun. So we're in 87 right now in the first segment, trying to find release dates for games. It's impossible.
Trust no one on that.
We just had to like designate, like, let's just talk about Akari Warriors. It's within this 8-month window.
It was June or July or August of 1987.
And most of the notable games at that time are arcade games still in 87. And Laser Time this week, I think you two are on it.
Oh, boy.
Around the time. But I finally did a show I've wanted to do for a long time. It's about farts.
Wow.
All about farts in pop culture. The most popular farts, the greatest farts, the most tremendous farts.
Oh, Laser Time, really. I'm on that one.
On that one. And if you like Simpsons, there's something in there for you, too. So check it out, please.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Monday with another full-length episode. See you then.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.